we'll work on that. Welcome to the Public Service Project, a collection of public service origin stories. I'm Kate Dallaire, former public servant and relentlessly curious person. One of the unique privileges of my life and my career has been meeting so many fascinating people along the way who've dedicated some portion of their own lives to public service, and I mean that broadly defined. I want to know why. I want to understand who they are, what shaped them, and what they've learned along the way. So this isn't about careers and resumes, that's been done. This is about the messy and real lives of the human beings who have had the privilege and the responsibility of serving, protecting, and improving our country in unexpected ways. Today, I am speaking with my friend, Farrell Stiers. He's the kind of friend that you can text after not seeing each other for a shocking 19 years to say, hey, buddy, you want to record a conversation about your wild and atypical career path today? And he will say, hold my beer. Farrell was born and raised in Colorado, dabbled in community college, and then launched himself onto a wild journey, with the goal destination being the Foreign Service. Spoiler alert, he didn't join the Foreign Service, but he did work in the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad and later ran a research agency that partnered with the National Democratic Institute, the Eurasia Foundation, and the World Bank. Now he runs a brewery in Belgium. I promise I'm not kidding. I will let Farrell tell you how all of that happened. Hi, friend. Welcome to the
Hello.
Show.
Hello. Thank you.
So while you were at community college, you decided that you wanted to join the Foreign Service. What happened? Tell me about that.
It kind of happened. I mean, I'd always had an interest in kind of international affairs broadly, in as much as like some kid in Western Colorado really can. You know, I was always deeply into the news and whatever, knew who the various major key figures were and things like that. But what really spurred me was I'd been just kind of like playing in bands and working at kind of whatever pointless crappy jobs, and dabbling in community college on the side. Like, I knew I needed to go to school eventually, and I was getting into my mid-20s and hadn't really accomplished anything yet. But I didn't even know what to go to school for. And while I was taking these random community college classes, there was an elective offered in Arabic. And I needed like a language credit or something. And I just took it on a whim because it seemed interesting. And I really, really fell for it. And it got me like far more curious, of course, about the Middle East. And that's what really pushed me. And in my head, like, I equated, you know, working in and around the Middle East to working in the Foreign Service.
So you kind of found a different way to pursue your interests organically.
Yeah, absolutely. I think at that point I was even, you know, you had to select a major, and I think I was like a business administration or something. I'm not sure, but like really that class, it triggered something in me and made me really excited, to the point that I even, it kind of blew up my life in a way. I sold my house and put all my stuff in storage or gave it away and packed my bags and moved to Egypt, having no idea what I was going to really accomplish there, or even, I didn't quite understand my trajectory, but I knew I needed to make like a bold move if I was going to make any progress here. And I knew that I needed some kind of like real world experience to validate my interest and kind of validate the trajectory that I was, I was going on. So I just did that.
So a lot of people do an internship, but you're like, you know, I'm just going to move to Egypt.
That's, yeah, I mean, It'll come up more than once. I think you could still charitably call many of these moves reckless, and perhaps they were. I've gotten really lucky that none of the really reckless moves have ended terribly. What my thinking was like, A, I had done not great in high school, you know. I made it out with like middling grades and just kind of like deeply didn't care about it. I was a little like punk rock kid up in the hills in this teeny little, you know, redneck school kind of. I think, and I'm saying that knowing that they would characterize themselves that way too, so that it's not purely pejorative. And so I knew that if I was going to, like, you know, jump into this line of work, I needed to kind of buff up my credentials, and this ridiculous move of like moving to the Middle East kind of seemed like a decent way to do it. And somehow it actually worked, because while I was there, I was just kind of teaching English on the side, and I found some Arabic classes at like a little Islamic school, like a madrasa. And so I was studying Arabic and teaching English, and I started applying to universities, which to me at the time seemed like this very distant goal, to like get into some fancy, you know, private school or one of the big name colleges on the East Coast. And it actually worked. I applied and got into several schools, but I chose the George Washington University in DC.
And that's where I met you. And I remember at the time, I was just like out of high school, and you had already lived in Egypt and had all this experience and seemed so worldly and had all these ideas to share. And so, it stuck in my mind that the fact that your path and your background was not exactly the same as everybody else's was an asset. And I think that that's kind of a theme that I keep seeing pop up throughout my life and my career. And it's why I really wanted you to come on this show, because I think this is a really challenging time right now for everyone, but particularly for people who have chosen careers in public service. And so to hear from you, not only how to follow a really authentic path and like let it develop as it will, but also how to think creatively about your skills and how to leverage the things that make you different, to your advantage. I think that's really helpful for everybody to
Sure.
hear. So I'm interested in knowing, as you kind of navigated your way through your life and your career, what has surprised you the most about yourself?
About myself, I think the initial surprise was that I was capable of doing any of this. You know, I think all of us have experienced some form of imposter syndrome. And as a public school educated kid from Western Colorado, there was no good, compelling reason to believe that I was going to be able to like keep up with this, what in my head at least was this like elite university on the East Coast. And when I first showed up there, you know, a lot of the kids I saw there, A, I was a bit self-conscious because I was much older than everyone. I don't know, in fact, if you remember this, but I was older than our professor in that Arabic class.
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, I beat her by 1 year. I mean, she was a very young professor and I was a very old student. We
You were
were
not a
both
very old
still.
student since compared to the
Yeah,
age we
well,
are
I
now.
mean, I think I was, what was I, 27 or 28 at the time? For an undergrad, like, you know, I was a decade older than most of the kids in my classes, or somewhere around there. And suddenly, you know, it was all these like Not entirely, but it was a lot of these like kids from these elite private schools in like Jersey and New York, and they clearly had like much better educations than I did. They were not particularly clued in about life, which I felt much more knowledgeable about that. But what surprised me most was that if you're smart and curious and driven, you can make it anywhere. And frankly, now at this point, as a wizened old gray-bearded man, I can say that that has revealed itself to me many, many, many times over in several different industries and anywhere else. So for the people in public service who are in the middle of the total insane storm that's happening right now, I would say if you have those attributes, you'll be fine. Like if you're smart and you're driven and you're curious, admittedly, if you want to be doing public service and you're not able to do that in public service, I'm sure that sucks. And I personally think it's a borderline crime to keep you out of that sector, but there's plenty out there in my experience that you can do. And that's how it was when I showed up in DC too, even as a 20 something.
Even as a seasoned old 20-something, which is so funny to think on now, I actually relate to that very much because I went back to grad school after I had three kids, and then I interned at the State Department as like a mother of three kids, and was like doing that and working at the same time. And I remember being referred to as an elder intern. And luckily I had a team that like just treated me as like another part of the team and really allowed me to leverage my skills and experiences. And I actually felt that joining the State Department at that point in my life, when I already had had a whole chapter to my career and a lot of other kind of important formative experiences, gave me a stronger sense of myself, which meant I had stronger boundaries about what I was and wasn't willing to accept, but I also had a better sense of what I could bring to the table. And so I think that's a strength, and I think you're never too old to be a beginner at something.
I think the biggest thing is just like not being ashamed of it or not being embarrassed. You just have to be bold enough to kind of take the leap. And kudos to you for doing it, because I think too many people get intimidated by that and tell we're very good at telling ourselves stories about ourselves, and it is very easy to kind of write yourself into this myopic, narrow narrative about who you are and what you can and can't do or shouldn't do. And those constraints are often just purely self-imposed.
It's so true. And haters always gonna hate, so just gotta do your thing,
Exactly.
right? So then I'm interested in knowing what surprised you about other people. We already talked about like what you've discovered about yourself, but what surprised you about other people as you navigated your way through your career?
Well, the big thing for me, so while I was still in school through kind of a friend of a friend, I got a job at a essentially a defense contractor in DC, and I took to it really quickly and kind of relatively quickly worked my way up to being a senior analyst for them, doing a bunch of Defense Department work, some State Department work also. And like our office was on the corner where on one direction was the FBI and catty corner from us was the Justice Department. You're really like right in the midst of all of it, of all of DC. And I started meeting, we would get briefings with these like I don't know, retired four-star generals. And then some of the analysis that I was writing was making it out to working four-star generals. And they were responding even, you know, sometimes they'd shoot an email back to a report I had written or something. And, you know, then as I grew further and further, it was like meeting ambassadors and all of these people with these very intimidating titles. And what surprised me was just how normal they all were. And I mean that in the kind of the most gracious way, but also even like they were all messy people also, you know. I met four-star generals who had some like truly kooky ideas about, you know, how the world worked and how we should be responding to it, and ambassadors who had like funny little personal tics that you had to kind of deal with, but who were also just people trying really hard and working really hard. And you realized the more time you spent around them that they had the same, you know, all the little hangups that we all do. They probably, not that any of them confided this in me directly, but they were certainly also suffering from imposter syndrome at certain times and were, you know, trying to do the best with the information they have, but sometimes making the wrong decisions and realizing it, etc. So it's essentially just that all of these very important people doing very important things were really just people. And while they were very savvy and very smart and usually incredibly good at what they were doing, they weren't superheroes, you know. They were, and I know that probably sounds rather trite to some people, but for me at least it was something of an insight. And I think that's also when I realized, like, while working for this company, and they eventually they sent me out several times to work in the US Embassy in Baghdad. I think that's when I realized like I didn't want to be in the Foreign Service. Now I had a real grounding in like what this life actually was and wasn't. I really loved working in kind of international affairs and doing the kind of analysis that I was doing and the research I was doing. But I also realized that the Foreign Service was probably not the place where I was going to flex my muscles in the way I wanted to.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I like your insights about the fact that really we're all just people, and I think that's the best medicine for that imposter syndrome that you talked about. And I think anybody with even an ounce of humility does suffer from that at some point. You should be questioning yourself sometimes, and we should question each other. So kind of along those lines then, I'm curious, if there has been an event in your life or along your career path that's kind of shaken your faith in yourself, especially since you're someone who didn't kind of just follow a formula, you really kind of built a custom path for yourself. Were there moments where you weren't so sure?
Of course there were. Like I've had many of them. I mean, part of working in the embassy in Baghdad, as anyone who has worked in government knows, you know, it is a very big and sometimes intransigent being machine, and you can't always tell if, even though you are committed and working really hard and trying your hardest to do the right thing, and generally the people around you are doing that also, you can't always tell if you're having the impact you want to, or if what you're doing is, you know, good for the world, let's say. I don't want to, you know, sound too grandiose. I was just like one little analyst doing one job. but you wonder about having that impact. However, I would say that, and I understand how this could be interpreted by people who are public servants right now and are going through the kind of hellstorm that's happening at the moment. But I could say it is just as bad, or in my personal experience, even worse in kind of the private industry side of things, because I went on later to found a research company, so doing essentially the same sort of stuff I had been doing for the government, but I founded my own company in Kyrgyzstan, and we did that for several years, and I was working with similar sorts of clients, international organizations and governments and that sort of thing. But eventually I moved to Europe, to Belgium, and where my skill set was very clearly incentivizing me to go, and kind of the pressures of the market were pushing me to go, was into market research. And I can say that definitely tested my faith in myself and, frankly, in humanity, because I loved what I did with my research agency, and I loved what I did when I was working for that defense contractor and working for the government and working with public servants. I should be clear, I'm under no delusions. I am not and never was strictly a public servant, and all due deference to those who truly are. I'm not trying to walk on your territory. But we were doing work kind of in the field, and I loved that so much. And when I got into market research, it really sucked all the joy out of it for me. And I just deeply disliked that the same skills that I was using to help understand, the I don't know, perceptions of democracy in Central Asia, or the impacts of foreign mining firms on villages in the highlands of Kyrgyzstan, or the way the Pan-Arab press was presenting our public affairs officers from the Defense Department in the press, or these sorts of things, that those same exact skills could be used to figure out, which packaging for a new shaver from Philips people would like. And that was really tough.
This makes me think of, are you familiar with the concept of ikigai? Like,
I
it's a
am not.
Japanese concept, and I should have, if I knew I was going to talk about this, I would have researched it, so I nailed it. But what I remember of it is that it's kind of this idea about finding something that gives you meaning and purpose, that also plays to your strengths, that also does some good for the world, for your community, and that also is sustainable for you. And like having all those threads come together into one thing is extremely difficult. And usually we're working off balance. You know, maybe we have a really profitable season of our careers that is totally soul sucking. And then we have another time where we're really doing what brings us great joy, and it's completely non-profitable. So I think the goal is kind of finding the best balance of those things and figuring out how to leverage our skills for all of those things, for good in our communities, but also joy within our own lives. And I think your skills, you tried them out in a lot of different areas, and there's value to that, even to understanding what doesn't make you happy. I'm wondering if there are skills you wish you had actually taken a little bit more time to cultivate that would have helped you in your career or in your life.
Oh, sure, of course, of course. The two that really come to mind for me first would be, just in general, math skills. Like I was told and came to understand through all of my schooling that I sucked at math. And honestly, what I've figured out is I suck at arithmetic. Like I was never, not even as a grade schooler, I was not good at my times tables. By the time it came to whatever high school algebra, I sucked at it. I was getting like terrible grades. I was crushing all my, whatever, history and literature and things like that. But I was led to believe like, oh, you're one of those like artsy humanities types, and you just don't have the stuff for this.
You can't be expected to add and be good, right?
Exactly.
That's basically,
Exactly.
please don't go any further because that's what I've been telling myself for 37 years. So
Well,
go on.
somehow I ended up I took this random research methods class, and was introduced to like applied statistics, and it clicked with me immediately. Like the concept, the abstractions of math applied to like the real world just opened my eyes, and suddenly I was really like in my personal free time, I still can't believe this when I think back on it. I was reading books about statistics. I was just going to, not because I had any class and needed to know it for anything other than like my personal gratification. I really loved it. And then I got quite good at it. And when I was working in the embassy in Baghdad, I was actually in an office with a bunch of PhD statisticians, people who clearly knew the math much better than I did, and they were really wonderful mentors for me. But I could keep up, and it was incredible. And I realized that it was just that, I don't know, I never know how to frame it. In a way, I feel like the education system like really let me down there. For the rest of that part of my career, I was a quantitative analyst. So I was always working quantitatively. I was always using statistics. And I really wish I had had the opportunity to kind of learn that earlier and in a more kind of formal academic setting. The other skill that really jumps to mind that I never hear anyone even talk about it. So I don't know if this is just my personal hang up, but just like basic project management skills.
Yeah.
You know,
No, I think that's huge. That's huge.
we have like home economics classes or whatever. You're like baking muffins in school or whatever, but like no one ever told me or showed me how to like manage an agenda and block it out properly, or like keeping like smart ways to keep track of, all of your emails or follow up appropriately with colleagues, or it's all like these menial little tasks, but there's a real skill to it. And I had to learn that one the hard way on the job, and I really wish I'd been able to like learn that ahead of time. And that is something. For all the smack talk that's happening about, wasteful, government, public servants, etc., I found, again, this is an N equals one sample, but I found that they were very, very good at that. And the people who excelled the most were just like really fantastic, like project managers. And I was deeply jealous of that as a skill.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And actually, you are making a really good point that, like, there are some skills that you cultivate and strengthen in public service careers that people who have not worked in that environment might not even know, that you possess, because we have to figure out how to package it correctly, right? So if you are one of the people who is listening, who has just left a public service career, has just left federal employment, and is trying to figure out how to market yourself to other jobs, like, absolutely lean into those kinds of skills, because the kinds of budgets and high stakes projects that you're managing, when sometimes like lives are on the line, and you're also, you know, receiving so much pressure just like from all of the forces within the bureaucracy and the demands for answers to senior level officials, you know, in 5 minutes, all of that is kind of unparalleled and so valuable in other areas. So make sure you talk about that. But that's our PSA for today. and to bring it kind of back around to the outlook for public servants and for public service as a field now, Farrell, how do you think our understanding of public service is changing or will look in the future?
Oh, I mean, I am old enough now to know that, like, predictions are a fool's errand, but clearly the concept of public service is undergoing a big transformation right now. If I had to guess, I would guess this whole purge and all the insanity that's happening is going to backfire, because whatever waste or whatever, like, I don't know, problems there were in, you know, DC and in the public service more generally, I've seen it, I've been there, and overwhelmingly you have, like, very smart, very diligent people who were doing overwhelmingly, like, very good work, and the country was certainly benefiting from that. So that will be a loss, and I hope that people will see that and realize it, and we will come to kind of revalue it again. Mm-hmm. But that said, I think these people have, you know, plenty ahead of them. Like, if I look at myself, and not that I am not some, you know, shining example of what people could or should do with their lives. Please don't take anything I say that way, but only to say I went from whatever, driving a forklift and driving whatever delivery trucks, to this move to Egypt where I was teaching English, to working in a 4-stars headquarters for the DOD and getting to brief the man who became the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, you know, every single day, to founding my own research agency, to now I founded and am running a brewery in Belgium. Like, there's a lot of world out there is what I'm, it's my very long way of saying, like, the skills that made me, that gave me the aptitude to succeed when I was a defense contractor are the same skills that made me good at running my research agency. And they're still the same skills that are benefiting me while I'm running a brewery. So, you know, these things, it's rough right now, but I have to imagine that there are a lot of people with a lot to offer the world, to offer their communities, big and small. And so, if nothing else, just I think know that there's just a lot of potential. Yeah.
Especially if you kind of open your mind and think creatively. And, you know,
indeed, like, I truly think I think about my brewery, one of, this is going to sound so trite and so cliche, I'm sure, but, like, all I can say is it's sincere. Like, I think very much about my brewery as a community project. Mm-hmm. Also, we are deeply enmeshed in our community. We are very well integrated there. We work really hard on the community aspect of what we're doing. And while that's running a brewery is a far cry from being a public servant, there's almost an endless number of things you can do and still be, still be serving the public in some respect. You just gotta kind of shift your paradigm and shift the way you're looking at it. And yeah, you can turn essentially anything into a community project.
Yeah, and you can make something real. Something that feels real.
Hallelujah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Well, and that was kind of the
that was
motivation
big for me.
for doing this podcast is I just want to have real conversations with real people. And I've had so many cool conversations in my life and thought, man, like I think other people could actually benefit from hearing that. And maybe even just to know that they're not alone in whatever kind of wild thought or challenge that they're experiencing. So I'm so happy that you've joined me here and hopeful that it does help someone or inspire someone else. And I just want to tell you, it is a privilege to know you and to reconnect with you after
Oh,
19
shucks.
years. And the thing that I appreciate the most about you is how you have always had such a strong sense of self, such an authentic viewpoint. You march to the beat of your own drum, and that takes a lot of courage. So I think others are going to find their own inspiration and courage by listening to you. And you might even have a few new customers swinging through. How do you say it? Stroom?
Strom, Strom.
Strom. I should have asked you before so I could say it with the perfect accent. If you
It's
happen
fine.
to be in Ghent, pass by Strom and be a part of Farrell's community. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. It's been a great pleasure. Like, how often does someone get asked to just s speak about themselves for half an hour?
Well, thank you for doing it.
Thank you so much.